Hi, I'm Hannah, team manager with the Orange Arrow Players Association, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to coach student athletes to aim for success off the field. Please consider making a play by giving, posting a fundraiser, subscribing to our podcast and YouTube channel, and staying connected on social media at Orange Arrow PA. Visit orangearrow.org for more information. Thank you for listening. Take aim.
Welcome to Inside the Play Call with Orange Arrow, and I'm your host, Sean Robinson. And today we have a very, very special guest, Amy Rashilovich. What's up, Amy? How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
So I got to start off. It's a beautiful day. Surprisingly beautiful day, right? In November, you're there in Pittsburgh, so we'll talk more about that. But this is the first. I'm extremely excited. So I have to switch the start of the podcast a little differently today because happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Today's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I'm awesome. 51.
Beautiful. Wonderful. When we set the time to record this podcast, I threw a date out there. You was like, yeah, that's my birthday. I was like, wait, you sure you want to meet on your birthday? You was like, yeah, let's do it. So this is the first, like I said, that I get to interview somebody on their very special day.
Thank you.
So, Amy, you know the importance of warming up and stretching. And so I have a few warm-up questions for you. You ready?
Think so.
All right, here we go. All right. If you're going to listen to one musical artist for 30 days straight, their entire catalog, who are you choosing?
No, I think it'd be Mavis Staples, the Staples singer.
Ooh, I like it.
At this point.
I like it. That's strong.
I've been listening to her more and more and really liking it.
You should play her for your birthday. You should play her.
That's a good idea.
You definitely should. Now, what is your favorite TV show of all time? If you're going to listen, we asked the music question, but now we're going to the TV question. Favorite TV show of all time, if it came on today, you'll sit down and watch it.
I got to tell you a secret. So when my kids were 4 and 7, they're now 17 and 20. We lived in the Netherlands for like 3 years. Kids went to school, everybody spoke English. Husband went to work, everybody spoke English. No one in my life at that point until they got home spoke English. So every day I would watch one episode of NCIS from the beginning because then I could hear an American accent and I knew there were enough seasons. And some days if the days were bad, it'd be 2 episodes or 3. And you couldn't really stream. So somehow I was streaming from some Asian, I'm sure it was pirated stuff, whatever.
Right.
But all the way through. It's like 18 seasons, I think.
That's great. I love it. Last one more question. Now, if you could select any superpower, flying, whatever the case may be, what superpower would you select?
You know, I want to say the ability to read people's minds, but that kind of scares me. So I'll say invisibility, because then I can hear what they're saying and doing when I choose to.
I like it. I like the thinking behind that as well. Amy, take us back. Young Amy, where are you originally from? Engagement, introduction to sports. Take it away a little bit.
So I grew up about an hour and a half from Pittsburgh in Johnstown. It was a steel town. I lived in a house. I had 36 relatives within a 3-block radius.
Oh, wow.
It was that kind of neighborhood. And we lived at a corner where the opposite corner was a dead end into a playground.
Hold
so
on,
sports
I
has always been.
I'm going to pause. Yep. So a couple of things that stood out to me. 36 relatives in a neighborhood. So I know
you couldn't get away with anything.
John, you couldn't get away with anything, but also no one can mess with you or your family members, right?
No.
It was a problem. No.
And it was that neighborhood, too. It was Moxham. So it had an edge to it. But yeah, I went to a parochial grade school, and like 80% of the people were my relatives somehow.
Because, so I'm somewhat familiar with Johnstown because playing at Pitt, we used to have our summer camps there. And coming from Ohio and having my freshman camp there, it was in the middle of nowhere, nothing but woods. It was rainy. I was like, where am I? I don't know if I'm cut out for this. So I was like, Johnstown, like, what is this place? And so it's like you said, it's
you were in the suburbs, man. You were in Richland. That campus is off on its own.
Johnstown, though. Okay, they refer to it as Johnstown.
Yeah. So it was like, it was outside the city. It's like, you know, going into the North Hills or wherever.
Okay.
Like, you're part of D.C., but you're not part of D.C. It was kind of like that on a smaller scale.
Got you.
So we were, I lived 3 blocks from a steel mill. Like, literally. Passed it on the way to high school. But yeah, my mom, so I have 3 sisters. My mom has 3 sisters. Her mom had 4 sisters. And like, they're just children everywhere. And we all stayed close. So yeah, you couldn't get away with much at all.
Yes. So talk sports. I'm sure you all were competing as a family, but also locally as well. So talk about your early sports life.
Yeah, we started, so the house that I lived in, we were like the opposite end of the block, dead ended into this playground. And at the time, the playgrounds had college kids in the summer times that staffed them. So we had kickball teams, wiffle ball teams, basketball teams, and you'd travel all through the city wherever we could walk and play. I mean, I learned to play soccer. It was an asphalt court, well, a parking lot surrounded by chain link fence with boys. I mean, because it was almost all boys in our neighborhood. So that was the other thing. I had one cousin until my little sisters came along. One cousin was a girl, everyone else was boys. So if we wanted to play, we really had to play. But it was everything. Kick the can, like, we played all the time.
Kick the can. I haven't heard that one in a while. Yeah.
I told you I'm old.
So what other interests did you have growing up besides sports? Were you into singing, dancing, writing?
No.
It was really sports?
It was all sports. But, I mean, I did a lot of community service work. Part of it was because that's what we had. Like, we had a requirement at school. So I was really involved in different community efforts. I've been involved in politics since I was young. I've been mouthy since I was young. So I've always had strong opinions. But it was, I mean, by the time I got out, we moved when I was 12, so it was a different playground. Now you're playing with the big boys in basketball. Like, it was a lot of sports.
So you mentioned being involved with politics. So I have to fast forward in your journey, your story, because you experienced something that people would give so much for this opportunity. I can tell the way that you're smiling from ear to ear. You know exactly what I'm speaking about. So I'm going to hand the mic to you. What am I speaking about?
President Barack Obama gave me a FaceTime call a few months back to thank me for some of the advocacy work that I've been doing over a number of years. Like, out of the blue, I thought I was just chatting. I do these chats every once in a while with random people and random panels, and I was ready for that. And he's, Amy!
Right.
And I've read the comments on the video online. People were like, she's lying. She's all dressed up. She couldn't have been. I'm like, first of all, I can't act that well. Like, it was the most. We talked for a good half hour or so about all kinds of stuff.
I didn't know it was that long.
We talked about that. We talked about Duke basketball. Well, no, because they edited it down. But, like, he and I talked about Duke basketball for a while.
Wow. Wow. So we're going to speak to why you all spoke about Duke basketball, but take you back to Johnstown. So did you play organized sports? Did you end up playing in high school? If so, what sports?
Yeah. So, I mean, in grade school, it was soccer. We called it field ball because there was only six people. And then basketball. And then high school was basketball and volleyball. Made, like, some all-conference teams, second team all-state, first team for volleyball. And then I walked on at Penn for volleyball. It was the first walk-on I ever took. And I lasted probably a semester or so and decided that just wasn't – it dominated my life. Like, that's what it does. And I didn't want – at that point, I loved the competition. I loved the people. But I really wanted to explore other things as well. So I ended up playing – I've ended up playing club, which I played club until I was – I don't know. Probably until after Laura was born. So it's been part of my life. Yeah.
What's your favorite position to play?
I was a power forward in basketball, and I was a middle hitter in volleyball.
Yeah, volleyball. Mm-hmm. That's what I was good into. Yeah, okay, middle hitter. Nice, nice. Yeah. So what did Laura play, your daughter?
So Laura, same deal. She played basketball and volleyball and then had her, like, she was getting recruited and had a really significant injury before her senior year. So she decided to play club. So she's playing club. Like, they just, I didn't know club teams now have national championships and stuff. So she just, her team took first in their division or something this past year. And I think that's what my son's going to do too. Like, he's more interested in club than playing varsity ball at a school. He's a senior this year.
That's awesome. Yes, Sam's a senior. He is plays basketball and volleyball there mm-hmm. in Pittsburgh. And so you mentioned Laura. Shout out to Laura, because Laura, she was one of the people that would meet with me in the Cathedral of Learning when she was shadowing / interning. And it was the early stages of developing a podcast. So she actually named the podcast Inside the Play Call with Orange Arrow. So shout out to Laura. Wow, that was some years ago too now. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
She's in London right now. She's loving life. Yeah. She's doing a semester in London and traveling by herself all over Europe. So
beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And so you went to Penn for undergrad.
Went to Penn for undergrad, which was interesting coming from Johnstown. My dad had done, he went to college at night, but nobody else had gone to college. And he went to, you know, night school at UPJ. So nobody knew what college was about. I did a summer program at Penn between junior and senior year and loved, like, I always tell the kids, I would walk down the middle campus, you'd hear seven languages, and it was just such a cool experience and environment, so that's why I wanted to go undergrad, and it just opened up the whole world. I mean, coming from Johnstown to a school like that in Philadelphia, like, it just gave me so many opportunities and experiences that I wouldn't have had. Plus, living in an urban environment like that was just different. I mean, I was sort of in an urban environment growing up, but this was a whole different kind of urban.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely. Now, so are you a Pittsburgh Steelers fan?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
So how was that? How was that being in Philly and the Eagles? Like, did you rep the Steelers like that? Or did you kind of kept it up under the radar? Oh, you did? Okay, it didn't matter.
Oh, no. I mean, no, it didn't matter. And there's Steelers fans everywhere. Like, who's going to out-mouth a Steelers fan? The Eagles don't, you know. They have a rep, but nothing like. I mean, even now, my husband and I will travel. We've been to Steelers bars in Germany and Italy and in Ireland. Like, they're everywhere. So, yeah, they're not kidding about Steelers Nation.
No, they're definitely not. They are not. And so, do you have a favorite Steeler? One or two of them? Who comes to mind?
Jack Lambert is the end-all-be-all for me.
Okay.
You know, my mom went to high school with Jack Ham, so there's that. He was in her class. Now, I'm waiting for Pickens and Pickett. Like, the two of them together are going to be special.
So. I sure hope so. Shout out to Kenny, H2P, mm-hmm. Pitt family right there.
Right.
After Penn, what was next for you?
So I, when I went to Penn, I thought I was going to work. My dad, you know, being in the mills, I wanted to work on unions, with unions. But that is not what my undergraduate school taught. So I ended up doing healthcare stuff. I had some professors that said, you know, if you care about workers, it's healthcare is going to be the issue. So I started, I worked for doctor's offices. I worked for some insurance companies. And then my husband and I went back. We went to Duke for grad school. So I did 2 degrees at the same time. I did a master's in business and I did a master's in public policy at Duke, both still studying healthcare. And then when we were done there, we came back to Pittsburgh because we wanted to start a family closer to family. So I've been basically, I think, other than delivering newspapers, and for 5 years, I was executive director of a small nonprofit. You and I talk about it a lot.
Definitely.
Every job I've had has been in healthcare.
So
and now I'm at Pitt.
Yeah, we're going to get to Pitt. I'm taking you back to Duke, though. You talked about President Obama speaking basketball. So how was the basketball team when you were at Duke? Who were some of the members?
Oh, man. That was Shane Battier's era.
Ooh, like, that's strong, it was that, strong era.
It was that set of teams. So we, I mean, and the crazy thing, like you'll see on TV, they'll talk about the undergrads camp out for every game. Grad students, you had to camp out for a weekend, like 3 days, 24/7 to get a lottery ticket to get, to try to get a book, you know, get a season pass. So you go in with a group of friends and then you split the book. Sadly, my husband won the book the first year, but didn't win the Carolina ticket. The second year we didn't win. But I mean, you would go like in an arena like that. I've never, and it, before I went to Duke, I wasn't a big fan of Duke. I just, because I mean, some of the older teams, I just wasn't a fan of some of the players. But you get in that atmosphere and the students are on the floor, all the grad students are behind one of the baskets. There's no air conditioning, so you're dying hot in, you know, December. Wow. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's fabulous. Like, that place just rocks.
Yeah.
I've actually taken Jeff there. I took him there to a Penn game. But then he took our son there not long ago to see Coach K before he retired.
Okay, so, yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That was a really nice ceremony for his, I don't know if it was last game, but what it was towards one of his last games, I think right before the tournament. I mean, they love Coach K.
And they lost.
They did lose that game.
And they lost. They lost that game. They lost the ACC. Yeah, they didn't have a good end of season. But yeah, I mean, he's such an influence on campus and his wife. I mean, they just have done so much, plus for the community.
Right.
I mean, they're really involved. So I'm very impressed with them.
Did you ever see him on campus?
Actually saw him to the school. One of the schools that I went to at Duke was named for a senator, Terry Sanford. And when Senator Sanford passed away, I went to his funeral, and Coach K was in the same pew as I was. And it like freaked me out because he looks short on television, but he's not. He is not a short human being. So it's just weird to like look up at a guy that you think is so much smaller because he's standing next to guys that are 6'8", 6'9", all the time.
That's true. And it's interesting because you're not short. And so if you're looking up, because how tall are you?
Exactly. I'm about 5'11".
Yeah. I think you might be shortchanging yourself a little bit there.
No. My kid and my family, now I'm the shortest one in the family, so I hear about it all the time.
Oh, Lord bless you.
Probably a good... Yeah, Laura's probably a half, I tell her she's not, but she's probably a quarter or half inch taller. My husband's 6'5", my son's about 6'5", so yeah, we're not small people.
Yeah, y'all need, well, actually, maybe I could be the point guard and we could go run five somewhere, right? I'll be the shortest out of the bunch. Wonderful. And so you are at Pitt, and in a month or so, I'm gonna start calling. Well, I'm starting it now, actually. But I'm officially gonna be Dr. Amy, Dr. Rasilovich, Dr. Maybe I call you Dr. AR. I gotta figure it out. What fits for me?
Okay, all right.
But tell us now what your focus on. there I put.
So I'm actually going to back you up a little bit. So I've been in healthcare forever, and my career was good. Like, I was half-time home with the kids and jobs for good people, but it wasn't like a passion for me. And then in 2017, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was really, really early, and I was really lucky. They caught it, they treated it, it's gone. But I was realizing at the time, no matter how, you know, insignificant cancer is, it's still cancer. So it sort of stops you dead in your tracks and you doing what you want to do in life, and realize that no, like, I wanted to do more things that would impact communities in need, and try to make healthcare more accessible for people. So I went back to Pitt in the public health school, and the degree's in health service research and policy, which is a mouthful. But I'm basically looking at racial differences in how people use healthcare. So my dissertation is focused on Black children and white children and who goes to well child preventive visits more often, white children do, and why could that be? You know, what factors impact parents' decision making, and how, you know, how easy or how difficult is it to get appointments, to go to appointments? And then I interviewed parents as well to hear about their experiences. So it's been really, really tough, but I've loved every minute of this program.
Are you able to share some of the things that you learned through your research?
Yeah, I mean, research, it's interesting. If you look at maps, like, now you can go back to like the 1930s and 40s when the government started to segregate areas where people lived, right? And we talk about systemic racism and what does that mean? Well, in the 30s and 40s, the government went in and they would grade neighborhoods to see which neighborhoods would get money, right? Who would get investments, who could get mortgages, and all white neighborhoods were, you know, desirable. And Black neighborhoods were generally hazardous. Really? So through history, and Black people couldn't get mortgages, they couldn't get business loans. When the government wanted to put in, you know, a freeway or knock down something for a stadium, it was in those neighborhoods. And by and large, through time, those are still the neighborhoods where the majority of Black people live. Like, they just, for a lot of reasons, didn't move out, but they also don't have the same level of wealth. So you can see systemic racism, whether or not people want to actually look at it in the face, exists because, you know, I'm able to, my grandfather could get a mortgage. So my parents had an easier time getting a mortgage, so I could get a mortgage. Whereas a lot of people who grew up in things that became these projects, they can't get a mortgage, they can't get credit. And that carries to every aspect of life. And, you know, Pittsburgh is one of the most segregated cities actually in the country. They say in the world, race-wise. And so that, in my research, I'm finding, you know, Black people tend not to have cars. They live in cities. They can't get to appointments. Parents talk about, you know, they've never left their neighborhood. They've never had different doctors or different insurance plans. It's harder to get jobs. So it's something, in addition to sort of learning the school stuff that I'm learning, it's learning about a whole way of life that I had no idea about. I mean, I grew up as a white person, and you think that that's the way everybody grew up. And it's just it's a different insight, and people have been so patient and so understanding with me as I've sort of tripped over learning history and learning what that means in people's day-to-day lives. And now I'm very committed to trying to make a difference, to try to at least get rid of some of those systemic problems. So people get their, you know, get their dignity back, get their health back, get their opportunities back.
That's wonderful. And that's important work and needed work. And thank you for being part of the solution and that part of the problem. Being part of the solution is definitely what you have been as it relates to Orange Arrow. And, you know, our mission is to coach student athletes to aim for success off the field, off the track, out of the pool, wherever the playing arena may be. You started off as a, you know, from a volunteer, sitting in one of our presentations of some of the work we've done through strategic work to becoming a board member. You volunteer your time, you give your money, your entire family supports. Why are you involved and why do you support the work of Orange Arrow?
I think because I know how important sports has always been in my life and all the lessons. So sports, I think there's so much good in participating in sports, but also seeing, you know, what my experience was off the court. You know, this isn't what I want my life to be. Or watching my daughter who, you know, had a catastrophic injury, trying to piece together, okay, now what am I going to do? And listen, you know, my son he's been an athlete. Like his primary identity, he says, has been an athlete his whole, you know, 17 years. And he wants to see what else there is. And without those other skills, like there's a whole other world that people need to learn about in order, because like you said, it's a game. I mean, to me, life is a game. You have to learn the rules. You have to learn, you know, how to succeed just as you do in sport. So I think that perspective of Orange Arrow, I also think the opportunity for these kids to meet people who they wouldn't meet in their normal, you know, in school or in their neighborhood, across race lines, across economic lines, even across gender lines. Like you're so much more prepared for life. Plus you really, really understand people and you become part of the solution, right? You see that you have stuff in common. Yeah. You start to realize what the differences are and ways to change if they need to be changed. But those conversations and that experience in and of itself, and you get that somewhat in sports. I mean, right? Like they say that the locker rooms are probably some of the most integrated places, but at the same time, spending time outside of sports, outside of school with somebody that you actually get to know and be friends with. I think that's hugely important. And I'm so impressed that that's part of what Orange Arrow does. And the kids, I mean, kids don't know, right? They're kids. So, yeah. But once you grow up looking at, you know, spending time with people who don't look like you, don't sound like you, don't live like you, your impression of the world is just completely different. Like you've just opened your eyes to a whole new world of possibilities. And I think that that's really important too.
That's awesome.
And for the college athletes, for them to realize that they have skills off the court. Like I really think it's important to see that they have these, you know, they're not just a quarterback. They're not just a pitcher or whatever.
Right, right.
They have all these other abilities and what they've learned in sports can be applied in so many ways in life. So that's why I've been, you can't get rid of me.
No desire whatsoever. Amy, thank you for who you are. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for your time today on your birthday. Appreciate you. Enjoy the rest of your day. Looking forward to catch up soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care.
Be well. Peace.